Dealing with pests can be a pain, but relax, Terminix can help.
Because when pests show up, so does Terminix.
With over 95 years of experience, they have what it takes to take on any pest problem fast.
If your home or business has pests, don't stress it.
Terminix it.
Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today.
That's TERMINIX.com.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off. Starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We are joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccant. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. And that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. Guys, I think this is the most casual I've ever dressed on the show. I'm going to rationalize it by saying I want to really feel like the common person when we talk about today's subject. But honestly, it's just because I don't...
You talking about that button-up shirt you're wearing? Or
yeah, it's sort of a mixed bag you got going. You got a button-up shirt underneath what appears to be a hoodie, and then with a Singha beer ball cap on, which I love, by the way.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, I look like I was thinking about this because I went to the store earlier. And I haven't gotten out much unless I'm traveling somewhere off the books. But I saw myself in a mirror and I said, you know what? I look like those characters at the very beginning of a video game where you just have to collect whatever armor you can find. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know,
you also look like the suspicious dude going to the drop point, you know, like in the movie, he's trying to look inconspicuous.
Right. No one will tell. I've got a hoodie and a ball cap, which is the Marvel Universe perfect disguise, right? We are talking about uncommon people today, though. Fellow conspiracy realists, Matt and Noel and I have been thinking about this idea for a while, and we're surprised that it doesn't get a little bit more examination. You'll see why in a second, but let's kick it off this way. Imagine being president. What can you say about presidents in the US and elsewhere that has not already been said? I mean, it's a tough gig. It's one of the few jobs in the world that only one person can have at a time, right? And people spend their entire professional lives slaving away, sometimes doing pretty horrific things, with the goal of one day being president of the United States. Not many people make it, less than 50 at the time of this recording. And once you get that job, I'll be honest, it sounds like a job that sucks, you know?
It's all about the residuals, man. They're in it for the long game, for the book deal, you know, for
the library. Talk show.
The library.
Oh, yeah, the library is cool, too.
You do get a library, whether or not you survive your term. There's also, you know, something to be said about patriotism. People are in it, sure, for power, the job kind of requires a power-seeking personality. But they're also, you know, I would say it's fair that a lot of presidents, hopefully the majority, are ideological. They want to make the country a better place, leave it better than they found it. But it's tough to know people's genuine inner motivations. All we can tell you is that when you become president, it stinks. You know, no matter what you do, a certain percentage of the population is virtually guaranteed to hate you. And the stress being involved with the role of America's top dog is so insane that people have conducted studies trying to figure out whether it biologically ages you at a faster rate, right? So
it certainly appears to.
Yeah, all those before and after shots are pretty telling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looks like somebody just got out of grad school when they go in, and then it looks like they were the single parent of 15 kids for 30 years after they get out in 4 years.
It is a little weird, though, because it is almost like you're courting the entire country when you're, you know, running your campaign to become president.
Yes.
And then you become president and then you leave. It's like you're right. It's like you've been in a marriage for 20 years.
You're hitting on 300
American people. Yeah, all of them.
You're hitting on 330 million something people at once. And you know, going into it, that this group date is not going to go perfectly. It's tough. Right. And, you know, there's also an argument that has some validity to it. The old adage that no one who wants to be president should be president because of all the difficulties involved. It's a what's the word from Star Trek? The unwinnable scenario. Kobayashi Maru.
That's the one.
Is that it? Yeah. You're in one of those situations. It's a Gordian knot, and unorthodox solutions are often the only thing you can do to get new results and break the wheel. But a while back, we started asking ourselves, just off air, just hanging out, about the rumors you hear about presidents. You know, you'll hear tales, especially in early America, of drunken carousing in the halls of power, secret meth habits. Drugs. This is a drug episode.
Yeah. Really quickly, Ben, what is carousing? Is it like gallivanting? How does one carouse?
Carousing has specifically the idea, it specifically refers to social boozing times. So like if you're at a happy hour with your friends after work, then you're carousing. You're not necessarily dead drunk. It's just like happy hour, have a beer or two, and then people are making jokes. Like, I don't know. All of our inside jokes are so weirdly inside.
Revelry.
Revelry. Right? Yeah, you're reveling. Mm-hmm. Reveling. It's like a low-key revelry. You know, it's not quite as awesome or epic as revel.
You're right. It is specifically tied to booze, whereas I think you can revel without booze.
Yeah. I often revel in my terrible mistakes. You know what I mean?
Yes, do we all.
Yeah. So,
not so, yours, our own.
Yes. Well, thank you for that. So this is a drug episode, and it's one that is inherently conspiratorial because we're talking about people who definitely have secrets. People who have many more secrets than the average person, and they live in a world of secrecy, and they are also highly protected. The media and the conversations that are allowed to be conducted about them are more tightly controlled than you might believe. So going into this, knowing all these weird factors, we asked ourselves how many, if any, U.S. presidents had substance abuse problems. Here are the facts. First off, this is a tricky question, and there is no way to know the entire answer.
No. We looked pretty extensively into this, and I will tell you right now, the things we're going to talk about are not fully corroborated in many instances. Some of the, like, the little mentions we're going to give to you are things that we saw in a couple places, but it wasn't like there was a book that some writer came through because of a biography and, like, let the public know about some of these things. Because remember, we're talking about 50 individual human beings for all the reasons that you just mentioned, men who are protected, who, you know, life is quiet about them unless it's in some kind of official book written by somebody they paid a lot of money to write.
Pretty untouchable for the most part, outside of a handful of big scandals. I mean, the private life of a president is pretty heavily guarded.
Yeah, it reminds me of Watership Down, weirdly enough. Do you guys remember Watership Down? It's the
brain does really creepy somehow. One
with the rabbits.
Yes.
The fields of blood. Yeah, that was that wrecked my childhood nice and good.
And that one threw me for a loop too. There's this great mythology in Watership Down about their god character named Frith and how rabbits become rabbits. And the gist of it is very paranoid. It's like the world is out to get you. It's out to kill you. So we know that presidents are kind of like those rabbits in Watership Down. They're the most highly protected people in the world, but they're also target number one for a lot of other rival institutions, a lot of other individuals. And this, it makes sense that they would be so highly protected. Their image would be so curated, because I was thinking in terms of statistics, you guys. Being president is a very dangerous job in the U.S. One of every 9 presidents has been murdered. Since 1865, one of every 4 presidents have had attempts on their lives. So that means that you have a 25% chance of someone trying to kill you sometime during your term. And if you look at successful assassinations, we're talking 1 in 5. So presidents have to be protected. And this protection extends, like you were saying, Noel, to the strict secrecy and confidentiality around their inner lives, especially their medical conditions. Anytime someone is possibly going to become president, you'll notice the media spends a lot of ink very carefully reporting stuff about the physicals they have to take, right? And there was a kind of rumor mill that got out of control when former President Donald Trump, I think, was unexpectedly taken to Walter Reed Medical Center on an unscheduled visit, because it generates so much concern. This is the guy in charge of the world's wealthiest country.
Not even to mention in the lead up to an election too, right? Like, I mean, we see that becoming a thing too with like Hillary Clinton, for example, where I think she took a stutter step or something like that. And all of a sudden it was big news that she was like on death's door. Obviously that was quite a misogynist narrative as well that was fed by the media and other candidates, I would argue. But yeah, you're definitely, it can sway things. It can change world events if you're actually president, or if you're in the run-up to becoming president, it can sway the election in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and think about it. Do you want, I would think of another analogy here. Think of Warren Buffett. So Warren Buffett is an elder statesman, almost a messianic figure for people in the world of finance. The president of the U.S. is not just in charge of an incredibly wealthy country, they're also in command of one of the most dangerous military on the planet. And with that kind of power at the height of international politics, the president's health becomes kind like people read tea leaves about it. It becomes kind of like the way people try to divine wisdom from Warren Buffett's off-the-cuff opinions. Like we talked about it before, I think most recently in our episode on CEOs. If Warren Buffett just goes on the news one day, and he can totally go on whenever he wants, if he goes on the news one day and he says a certain company is good or bad, like if he goes on CNN or what have you and says Pogs are coming back, then the Wall Street will react and like people will invest in Pogs, because it doesn't matter if he's telling the truth. His opinion is just, it has so much weight to it. So if a president in this comparison has an illness or a medical condition that goes public, right? Like if it turned out someone had a long-term chronic condition, then global rivals will probably interpret that condition as weakness, as an opportunity to advance their own interest. And domestic rivals will totally do the same on both sides. They'll say like, hey, let's get the, by both sides, I mean the Democrat-Republican divide. They'll try to strike when that window, if they see a window of opportunity. And that's not the other thing. We talk about drugs. So first, yes, they're going to keep drug use secret because they basically don't want Russia to know. You know what I mean? Like, and that makes sense. But I was thinking about this too. One of the last factors I would add here is that the legal status of various drugs has been in flux over time. This is a young country. It's still figuring stuff out, and it contradicts itself in a lot of laws over time. I think about that a lot.
Well, I mean, like methamphetamine used to be like super legal and super popular and used heavily in the military. Not to mention, I believe MDMA was even at one point like an experimental military drug. Obviously, we know LSD's checkered history within the government with the MK Ultra and all that, but specifically amphetamines, that was like a military man's drug right there, because it got you like, kept you from falling asleep on your post, and you know, used fighter pilots a lot, like during the world wars.
You bring up a really good point there, Ben, just about the time factor, the legality factor. One thing that I at least didn't think about as we were researching this story is how at least cannabis and marijuana, how the legality of that shifted and changed, how it became a negative thing. But for a long time, it was accepted and just a part of, again, military culture was a part of a lot of other culture.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because drug legislation, I feel like this is fair to say, drug legislation in the U.S. is as much based on moral panics or performative values as it is on actual concerns for people's safety. But for like the most extreme example, let's take the Founding Fathers. So we're going to hang out with those dudes in just a bit. But think about this. You can say this conclusively. Absolutely none of the U.S. Founding Fathers, presidential or otherwise, tried LSD. It's not because they were mad about hallucinogens. It's because LSD literally did not exist at the time. And then when we talk about marijuana, like you say, it was not a big deal. And a lot of stuff modern Americans assume about the early American attitudes of marijuana are totally, totally wrong. It was way less of a big deal in terms of like getting high. They thought that was something French people did. Yeah. Yeah, several. Yes.
Yeah, Founding Fathers, right? I mean, but was it smoked, though, or was it more thought of as like something to make strong rope with?
Right, exactly. And we'll get into that, too. Due to these factors, these things we named, the secrecy, the need for protection, the importance of public image, the U.S. public generally does not learn about scandalous or problematic medical shenanigans until way, way, way after the fact, and often through unofficial channels, through like an expose or something. These are the things the presidential library would rather you not know when you visit. So we can confirm, we can't always do this on stuff they don't want you to know, but we can confirm, yes, some presidents did drugs. They did a lot of drugs. They did hard drugs. They partied in a way that would get anybody else arrested. What are we talking about? I'll tell you after a word from our sponsor.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
The Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process. I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers, like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox?
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
Here's where it gets crazy. So this happens with a lot of world leaders, right? We're talking about people at the heights of privilege. So I think before we dunk on these folks too hard, we have to acknowledge they're not so different. I mean, just look at the history of monarchies. You know, there's so many tales of depravity and very deep damaging addiction. And it's a story for another day. But I just felt like we need to do due diligence with this disclaimer before we start calling presidents drug addicts.
That's probably a good call.
Just in case. So, okay, great. So
we're not even going to get into vice presidents.
No, so, you know, which is funny.
Y'all are given, vice presidents?
Given their name, I was thinking the same. But all right. So long story short, heck yeah, presidents did drugs. And future presidents will probably also do drugs. Regardless of what the policies in place are at the time. Let's go back to what we teased kind of before the break. Hemp. Start with George Washington, the OG. So there are tons and tons of myths about this guy. He's an American legend. A lot of these myths have later been busted or corrected, like the cherry tree thing, the wooden teeth thing. The story there is actually way more gruesome than just wooden teeth. And one of the most popular stories that is still, I guarantee you, told in dorm rooms across this country of ours is someone will be like, Paul, give me a bong rip sound. Perfect. Someone will be like, you know what, man? George Washington's the best president because he loved getting high, man. He smoked weed all the time. And people were like, whoa.
That guy had mad chill.
Yeah, he's so chill, man. He would love fish. There's a myth, though, here because I want to be careful how we say this. There is no proof that he smoked weed. He definitely did grow industrial hemp. Industrial hemp is the non-fun weed. Like Noel said, it is for making rope. It's very important to the maritime industries.
That's right.
It can make all kinds of things, guys, not just rope.
No, but rope is, I mean, you're absolutely right. But like, I think it's in theater, old theaters. They have like ropes that they'd use to raise and lower like backdrops and the curtains. I believe they call those the hemps.
Oh, cool.
Or maybe that's also a nautical term for the lines that like raise and lower sails, the hemps.
The hemps. Yeah, this
hemp is so strong, bro.
Hemp is so strong.
This rope is getting me so lit.
No, it's like physically strong.
Oh, my bad.
It reminds me of
that placebo effect. Smoking rope.
It reminds me of that. It reminds me of two things. It reminds me of what was that old weed magazine where they would sell wizard smoke, which was like
High Times?
High Times. And then High Times sold wizard smoke, which, spoiler alert, is not the same thing. Don't be fooled. So I love this picture of like some, you remember that film Half-Baked, which referenced before, John Stewart plays one of the smokers who's always like, you have to get high and then try to do new things, like look through telescopes or whatever. So I picture in this dorm room idea, I picture George Washington like, hey man, you ever tried to start a country? And people are like, yeah, that's what we're doing now, George. And he's like, you ever try to start a country on weed? Like, that's...
It hits different. It hits different, it hits that's different. For sure.
There is no proof that he was smoking this. And the things that purport to have evidence of that, it hasn't stacked up in what we can find. And this is not to say people are intentionally misleading you. They're just mixing up some of the facts. Because in the colonial era and in like the early America era, citizens were legally required to grow hemp. And it was such a big deal that for like more than 150 years before racism makes the marijuana laws come into play, people could pay taxes with hemp. If you didn't want to like pony up cold hard scratch, you would just give the tax man a pile of hemp, which I don't know what the equivalency rate was there, but it'd be interesting to find out. So,
well, I mean, it makes a lot of sense. You know, in the 1600s, 1700s, you could pay many of your debts with things like wood, like cords of wood, right? If you were chopping wood, that's how many pastors were paid. That was their salary, was wood. Because, you know, you had to live through the winter. So it made sense as a currency.
And much closer to a barter economy, agrarian barter economy at that time. Yeah, so he wasn't, we know that if he was smoking, and again, there's no proof that he wasn't smoking the kind of stuff you would imagine in a stoner movie. It wouldn't have done too much for him because of the low amount of THC in there. And there's no record on the other side. There's no record of him explicitly saying, "I don't smoke hemp," or what's the other famous line? "I tried it a couple times, but I didn't inhale." He didn't say any of that. We know he did like to drink alcohol, though. A ton of people did. At one point, his estate was the biggest producer of whiskey, I think, in America or on the North American continent. He made like 11,000 gallons of the stuff in 1 year alone.
We know all about George Washington's booziness from our buddy Alex Williams' yearly gift of George Washington's eggnog, which is like booze and more booze and booze and booze and booze and then some sugar and like egg. And it says like sip generously or something. Like there's a whole like recipe that even tells you how to enjoy it.
It's weird too because, yeah, the recipe is hilarious, but also I'm impressed with Alex for making that stuff drinkable, but it's not something I would mess with lightly or mess with if I had anything to do the next day. So be careful. It's a holiday drink. I found some estimates that claim over the lifetime of his career in office, George Washington alone spent about 7% of his income on booze, on spirits of one sort or another. That was really common, but we should stay on weed for a moment. So there are two guys, very similar names, James Monroe and James Madison. James Monroe gets the chutzpah award today because he was an ambassador to France. That's where he learned that hashish was a thing and you could smoke it. He came back to the U.S. And again, remember, prohibition laws haven't come into play here. And he's like telling his friends, like, hashish is awesome. And we should smoke it. And I'm going to, can I smoke it in here? I'm going to be quiet. I know we're doing the meeting. And he continued to smoke until he was like 73 or something. James Madison, famously featured in Hamilton, is on record saying that weed gives him the insights he needed to create a new democracy, which in fairness, that sounds like something someone would say when they were really high.
You ever tried creating a new democracy on weed?
Exactly.
It's so weird to me thinking that people had access to marijuana before there was Tim and Eric Awesome Show.
Yeah.
That's weird to me. I just don't get it.
That show is literally made of marijuana. It's true. But Ben, were people, so the hashish was more popular than smoking like the, you know, dried leaves of whatever, hemp plants. Like, I don't picture people like smoking joints or bowls or anything back in those days. Like, I think the hashish was like the first kind of big inroad of like using this as a psychotropic substance. Is that right? Or were people smoking the just straight up rolling
spliffs and stuff? I think Monroe was later on. He wasn't too discriminatory. So there's something else that occurs when marijuana prohibition becomes mainstream and becomes law. Presidents who are already, you know, constantly under political attack are never going to admit whether they've done something like that, whether they did smoke weed in their teenage years or something. And that makes sense because it's going to be political suicide for them. That's why we don't know a lot about sort of the guys in the middle.
Hey, I guess Clinton was just kind of compelled to say that dumb thing about not inhaling because he was under questioning for the Lewinsky thing. Or was it during that? No, it wasn't. It was separate than that. Like, why would he even say that? Why wouldn't he just tell them to go F themselves?
It was very, he had a very weird kind of, his critics would call it hair splitting, you know, where he would say like, well, what did you mean by sexual relations? Or what did, you know, yes, I tried weed a couple of times in England, but I didn't like it and I didn't inhale. And that was a great setup for a later president, Barack Obama, who, when remarking about marijuana, said, yeah, I smoked weed and I inhaled. That's the whole point.
He's the cool president, though, you know? It was like a new era for he makes cool Spotify playlists and watches like indie films and stuff. You know, he's like the hipster president. So he got a pass.
George W. Bush may have smoked weed, but this is interesting. I want to see what you guys think about this because he is a very interesting character. He struggled with alcohol before becoming a teetotaler. It's also widely suspected that he did cocaine quite prolifically in his earlier years. And I don't know. Let's see what you think here. He has, for the entirety of his political career and his later artistic career, refused to respond to questions about marijuana in the public sphere, except there was one thing we found where he was speaking with his biographer, a guy named Douglas Weed. Yes, that's a true story.
No way.
Yes way, Ted.
I love that.
But his biographer was talking with him about this, and Bush said, I wouldn't answer the marijuana questions. You know why? Because I don't want some little kid doing what I tried.
Also, because I'm the president, right? Like, I won't dignify that with a response. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but that after the fact response is pretty admirable to me.
Agree. You know, I completely agree.
Because influence.
Bush is, I didn't care for that guy when I was, you know, an up-and-coming little rabble-rousing early 20-something. But, man, by comparison, he came off looking not too bad. You know, he paints and stuff, and he has come back and made some statements about choices that he made. And all. I mean, he's still, you know, problematic, but I'm with you, Matt. I think it is admirable that he, you know, would think of it in those terms.
And for the record, he also had apparently, by all accounts, cleaned up his act well before he took his father's job as president. Because, of course, despite purportedly being a meritocracy, there is a weird system. I'm not even going to talk about it. If you've listened to this show, you know the stance. It's just weird, and it's embarrassing to have to talk with people from other countries about it. But
so what, about political dynasties?
Yes. Okay. Whatever. It's
non-monarchical monarchies.
Yes. And
malarkey.
Yes. The malarkey of monarchies. So let's go to some other guys. When presidents were way more open about this, Andrew Jackson, Franklin Pierce, Zachary Taylor, these three guys have some very important things in common. They were all president at one point. They all came from a military background. And they all liked getting high with their fellow soldiers. They talked about it. They liked smoking weed with them. Franklin Pierce, who is often regarded as a not great president, wrote to his family once and said essentially that smoking out with his fellow soldiers was, quote, about the only good thing about war, which feels like a humanizing thing. But
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe he wasn't a good president because he was like an okay dude.
Maybe he was. Maybe there was international crises occurring, and he was like, okay, I want to say the quiet part out loud. I know what we're all thinking. What's the snack situation?
And really think about it. That's 1850s, I think.
Pierce.
No, 18... Is this Pierce or Taylor?
This is Pierce.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I was thinking Zachary Taylor. But Zachary Taylor, who's smoking with his troops, that's like 1840s. He died in 1850. So
I wonder if it was any good. You always hear about weed being like better now than it used to be. But then you also hear about the killer skunk in Nam. So I never know what to believe.
Yeah, there's not. I mean, this is, I think this is a fun thing to speculate on. But as we pointed out, proof is going to run scant in a lot of these things. We're trying to be clear when we're saying there are rumors or there are allegations or whatever. And again, we know that because of marijuana prohibition, which continues in parts of the country today, maybe not forever, if you admitted this on a campaign trail while the public was very against marijuana, you would be like a guy saying, I am the perfect person to run this dealership because I used to steal cars. You know what I mean? I got a grasp on this. And you could say the same thing about private public revolving door deals anyhow. But so nowadays, I think we can all say whether or not you yourself enjoy marijuana or any of its various like versions, right? Whether dabs or edible stuff, any of that, whether or not you personally care for it, I think we can agree that today marijuana's image has been somewhat redeemed. It's seen as a less dangerous vice, and research definitely indicates it's less dangerous than some legal drugs like alcohol. But this gets us to the juicy stuff. What about those so-called hard drugs? Not just the booze, not just the, you know, like the tobacco and the caffeine and the marijuana, the THC. We're talking about stuff like cocaine, opioids, speed.
So if these are hard drugs, does that mean marijuana is soft drugs?
Marijuana, is it a soft rock drug?
I guess so. I mean, it's hard referring to like the fact that it's a substance, a powdered substance, and maybe marijuana is soft because it's soft and pillowy.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it'd be interesting to find the etymology of hard drugs because you don't really hear people say soft drugs, right?
No, they don't.
I've never.
But maybe they should.
Maybe they should.
It could be a factor of addictive qualities, you know, habit forming stuff, maybe.
Oh, soft drugs is a term, by the way. GatewayFoundation.org describes soft drugs as being considered less harmful than hard drugs, producing little to no physical or mental damage. The term soft drug is often used interchangeably with the phrase gateway drug, which definitely sounds more like a cautionary description than soft drug. Soft drugs are fun. It's like soft serve ice cream.
It's basically gelato, guys. No, I think that's a very good point. So it seems like the distinction here is that a hard drug produces severe physical or psychological dependence, right? Like there are some drugs where just the process of trying to get off them can kill you, right? I think that is morphine, I want to say. Morphine withdrawal can't be fatal. So did any presidents mess around in this sphere? We'll tell you after a word from our sponsors.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
Hello there. I'm Ann Thompson, editor-at-large for IndieWire.
And I'm IndieWire's deputy film editor, Ryan Latanzio.
And we're the co-hosts of IndieWire's weekly Screen Talk podcast.
Join us each week for an in-depth discussion of the latest in film and TV industry news with special guests along the way, including filmmakers and executives.
Hear from us every Friday morning on iHeart platforms or wherever you get your podcasts as IndieWire shares what we've learned from the movie week that was.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
Hard drugs. Well, to err is human, as they say, and presidents, no matter what their fans might tell you, are human as well. There are no god kings in American politics. There are no superheroes with extraordinary powers. I mean, I was noticing this because something really weird happens in news coverage with these things. You'll see these stories that kind of like pop up like a flash in the pan, and then they quickly disappear. And some of those were rumors surrounding former President Trump, for example, and allegations that he was at some point using cocaine. Howard Dean, former presidential candidate, even went on Twitter. And Howard Dean, you know, has a medical background, and he was saying, yeah, look at him sniffing while he's making some sort of speech. You know what I mean?
Is that when he had COVID or?
I can't remember if this is the.
I'm just joking. I'm sorry.
Can't remember if this is a COVID remark or if this is a. Like people were saying, look, this guy seems to be behaving as though he is on cocaine, which would be a big deal because cocaine is still very illegal in the US and was during his presidency. But this hasn't been proven. We know he definitely wasn't drinking because he's a teetotaler, sort of like later George W. Bush. But I have to ask you guys, what do you think the odds are that someone like a well-heeled businessman like Trump, who later became president, would he have done cocaine? Have you heard any speculation about this?
I have a story. I'm not going to name names, but I have a story about someone that I know from New York City who was going to a diet clinic like in the 70s or early 80s, maybe. And you'd go to these diet clinics often in those days to get diet pills, which is essentially meth, you know, or like stimulants. It makes it, you know, reduces your appetite. Certainly something that's less okay now, but back then I think it was very, very common. And this person, who shall remain nameless, claims to have that Donald Trump went to the same diet clinic. And while there can be no confirmation as to whether he was going there to procure these said stimulants, it is entirely likely. But those stimulants would have also been legal and something that one could continue to take with a prescription over time. So I think it's more likely that it's that than cocaine, because Trump strikes me as such a teetotaler. I just don't buy him doing cocaine.
And those kind of accusations, regardless of your political leanings, can be unfair if you don't have any, if you're just sort of saying, this is my take on someone who might have a stuffy nose, just to be fair. But I love the point you're bringing up about prescriptions. These are, you know, these guys have some of the best medical care in this country, which means that any possible conditions or any possible developments are obsessively watched for and predicted. And there's a lot of importance put on, you know, their mental health and their ability to perform in a sustained, sharp manner. So it wouldn't be surprising at all to see that presidents have been maybe overprescribed drugs at certain times. These would count as legal substances because they are prescribed. And, you know, if you're basically the president, if you want a prescription, they'll give it to you. But just because something has a legal status in the criminal justice system doesn't mean it's not addictive and does not mean that substance abuse patterns are not going to be formed. Oh, and, you know, there have been accusations all the time about this. I'm sure current President Biden, as we record this, is getting accused of being on some kind of pills, right? But if you want to know, the real partier in the history of the U.S. presidency, thinking about one man who stands forever immortalized in this weird frat house environment, John Fitzgerald Kennedy. John liked to party. He also had a lot of health problems. When he finally ran for president, his back was what we call FUBAR, to keep it a family show. He had something, experts are pretty convinced now, called Addison's disease, which is an
I didn't know that.
It's an adrenal condition. So remember those insults of like low energy Jeb Bush or whatever? JFK was struggling. He had low energy, and he was also going up against Richard Nixon in those famous debates that taught us a lot about media and that also probably cinched the election for him. He was young. He's kind of a whippersnapper. Say what you want about Richard Nixon, but that guy was sharp. He was whip smart, and he also had a lot of experience. He knew the ropes of politics.
Wasn't that I think what you're referring to maybe is the fact that this was the first big televised debate, and like Nixon looked kind of haggard and sweaty, and Kennedy just looked kind of, you know, like a smoke show, and it really the optics of it really kind of cinched it, like you said.
Yeah. People who listened to the debate on the radio tended to think Nixon carried the day, and people who saw the televised version were convinced that JFK was the better performer in the debates. But here's something people didn't know. I certainly didn't know this. I think a lot of people definitely did not know in 1960. But right before the 1960 presidential election, Kennedy is a senator, right? And he makes the acquaintance of a guy named Dr. Max Jacobson. Dr. Max Jacobson will later go on to get some cool street names. Miracle Max, he's called sometimes. People in the White House started calling him Dr. Feelgood. You can see where this is going, right?
Yeah. Yeah. He was giving Kennedy shots of what he referred to as some kind of super vitamin or like some kind of mystical tissue regeneration elixir, right?
Well, and according to Drunk History, placenta.
Yeah, this was a very that shout out to Drunk History, man. That's such a good show. And I feel like one day the three of us could do a Drunk History thing. It would be fun. We don't have to be drunk. I just want us to do silly reenactments of historical events. But yeah, Dr. Feelgood, Dr. Jacobson, was giving Kennedy shots of a formula that he had created. And this formula, by the way, was popular with many, many celebrities of the time. It was also he was a Jewish immigrant from Germany, and he was convinced that German forces were specifically using his formula on their troops. And maybe even Hitler himself was taking a jab. So these, like you said, these miracle tissue regenerator shots, they contained amphetamine, methamphetamine, allegedly animal hormones, like you said, Matt, human placenta, painkillers, steroids, and multivitamins. So to be absolutely fair, there were vitamins in there.
All at once? All of this stuff? Seems like it's going to kill a racehorse.
It's a formula, man. It's like Coca-Cola's secret formula, but in this case, it's got placenta.
Where do you get the placenta?
And painkillers? Yeah. That's like a speedball, man. It's wild.
Well, so as soon as Kennedy gets his first shot of this, he feels amazing. He's like,
yeah,
euphoric.
You would.
And he's like, I am, you know, sometimes people talk in corporate America. Picture him walking off from the debate and he's like, I crushed it. I crushed it.
And then he literally smashed a desk with his fist.
Yes.
And cracked in half, you know?
Yeah, and to be fair, we do not know whether Kennedy knew what was in those shots.
Right.
Or, you know, or like what was explained to him exactly.
And
like tales that we hear way after the fact.
Yes.
Different culture around medicine then, too. You just kind of trusted and took what the doctor gave you.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's why they say doctor's orders or do as the doctor ordered. Yeah. I think that's a great point, Matt, because if he had been told, yeah, I'm going to shoot you up in the butt or in the throat with meth, he might have reacted differently. But he liked this. He felt it worked for him. And all in all, he got at least 34 of these shots on separate occasions. And folks in his inner circle were starting to get worried. Drunk History has a pretty great depiction of this. But from the reports we saw, when he was confronted by Robert Kennedy, his brother, and his brother said, dude, you're shooting up speed. Then the president didn't really care what the answers were. He said, look, I don't care if it's horse piss, is the quote you'll see. He said, it works. Eventually, the White House physicians get wise to this, and they put a stop to it. They kind of have like an intervention. They're like, dude, you are in charge of nuclear weapons.
All right, Miracle Max, you're no longer welcome in the Oval Office.
Right.
Well, I haven't confirmed the Drunk History telling of it, but do we know whether the Carlisle Hotel thing was the reason for that intervention?
It's a little unclear on the order of operations, but
okay.
But because the way Drunk History relates it, which again, it's a great show, but the way Drunk History relates it is JFK gets cut off from Dr. Feelgood, and he's already like establishing a bad pattern because he's asking to get shots more and more frequently. And apparently he is just dealing with physical pain that he cannot handle. And he contacts this Dr. Feelgood. And he's like, Dr. Feelgood, you gotta make me feel good one last time. And I don't know why, that's Kennedy is a beat poet, I guess. And right. And so they agree. And it's a wild story. They meet at the Carlisle Hotel in 1962. And there's one last shot. One last rocket to Euphoria, but it's a much bigger dosage than Kennedy is used to, and he loses his mind.
Yeah, it sounds kind of humorous, I guess. Maybe not. No, it's kind of scary. Speed freakouts are nothing to be toyed with if you've seen like Requiem for a Dream and other like drug movies of the 90s and early 2000s. But yeah, he basically suffers a psychotic break. And what is he like, mooning people or something?
Mm-hmm. He takes all his clothes off.
He stripped down.
Yeah.
Oh, full cartwheels.
Yes. Cartwheels. Okay. Down the hallways of a really nice hotel.
Right.
is this just known after the fact then? Or is this something
that
surely this wasn't
this after
like
the fact.
In the news?
Yeah,
that would have been a field day.
So how weird and ridiculous is this? He's doing this in front of the Secret Service, in front of his bodyguards. He's like, woohoo, yeah.
Check out my dick.
I feel amazing. I call this move helicopter. You can picture it. And they're like, you know, they're respectful. Their job is to protect this guy. By this point, they have probably seen him under the influence of this substance before. And so they're kind of like, from what we found and from what the way it gets reported unofficially is, they were kind of amused a little bit. They were like, this is crazy. This guy is the president. And he is
spry. But no doubt keeping a perfectly straight face the whole time.
I'm trying.
Just laughing behind their dark glasses.
I'm sure that was tough to keep a straight face. But then the fun and games are over because he breaks out of the hotel room. And now he's crazy. Like he is having a psychotic break.
Come and get me.
Running through, as Matt said, one of the most influential, important hotels and places of political horse trading in D.C. And he's going nuts. This is going to be a disaster.
I just picture the Secret Service running after him in a line like Benny Hill style, yeah, with it all sped up. And then he then like hits him over the head with a hammer and kind of runs away in the other direction.
And he's just like screaming like, Marilyn, you know.
Oh, no.
I'm coming just, for you, Marilyn.
Guys, think about the political disaster that would have been. Like if that happened now and it was Biden and he was at the W just naked doing cartwheels, which would be very difficult for Biden at his age, but like everyone would have a cell phone. There would be footage of it. It would be on the news. Right. Our enemies, our ideological enemies would just have a field day.
Yeah.
I mean, my God.
So
this is not a scenario that could ever occur again, I would argue.
Not in this way. This is pretty nuts. So if you were listening to this and you...
And it turns out Kennedy had pretty nuts. That's what the Secret Service...
The bodyguard said that?
Yeah, yeah.
They were like, you know, he puts the work in to manscaping. That speaks to his character. But didn't see the conversation going there, but it's a good point. So this is something you need to understand. If you grew up in the U.S., if you live in the U.S. this time, actually, I would say anybody alive today, we need to understand how very lucky everyone was that nothing went sideways during this psychotic break. How would a speed-geeked president respond to nuclear threats, for example? Right? How would you be able to say, like, how would you be able to enact the amendments that say the president is currently unfit to serve and it's got to be the vice? You know, it's tough.
Well, one side effect of heavy methamphetamine use is like severe delusions of grandeur and like thinking you're kind of the center of the universe, you know? And I think we know one world leader that took a lot of amphetamines and acted out the worst possible version of that symptom. It was Hitler. You know, I mean, I don't doubt that his amphetamine use contributed to his like myopic, you know, completely bonkers worldview in some ways or in the way he like expressed it.
Yeah. And this is a good point because we need to also highlight, as we said earlier, that other world leaders have also, I don't know what you want to call it. You want to call it partying or whatever? I didn't understand that for a long time. I was so square.
Do you party, bro?
Yeah. I would be somewhere having, maybe someone asked me to party. I didn't know what they meant. I was like birthday parties, like.
Wait, I don't know what that means either.
I think it means to do cocaine.
Usually. I think it can mean different things, but yeah, it depends on how it's being asked and who's asking. Okay. It can also mean, you know, if a sex worker, you know, maybe asks you to party, at least in movies, that usually means, do you want to pay me for sex?
Well,
I thought it was like multiplayer games on PS4. Okay, never mind.
Well, I'm with you there.
Mario Party. It's Mario Party.
Oh, okay. It'll have the modifier. Yeah, I know for years, and this is... embarrassing, but kind of endearing, I guess. I just thought people were asking me my opinion on partying.
So do you party?
I like a good party. I am not, I don't have interest in whatever they were specifically referencing, but I generally was like, it was like asking someone, the way I thought of it, it was like if you ask someone, hey, you like music? Who's going to say no? Who's going to be like, music's bullshit? Matt,
hot take. Ben, you're gonna get quoted on that. Music's bullshit.
It'll pull out of context. No, the only person we have ever worked with who, and this is a beautiful, beautiful moment, our dear friend of the show, Scott Benjamin, who you probably heard on our recent Highway of Tears classic. We were on a road rally with him many years ago, and we were trying to find music that we could play in the car. And Scott was a very, very tolerant, live and let live dude. But he also eventually told us he just, quote, wasn't that into music of any kind.
Yeah.
We spent like 20 minutes asking him genres. And he's like, oh, no. Most of the time, he's like, what is that?
But does he party?
That's the question. Anyway, JFK did. But to be clear, JFK was also seeking some kind of respite from these very painful medical conditions. And at certain points, he was definitely up to multiple medications per day, you know, including medication, including some like steroid stuff. And if you look back at people who've researched his medical records, they say when he was no longer a patient of Dr. Feelgood, his policy decisions seemed to become a little more stable, but that's a correlation. Experts are not going to call that a causation just yet. We're not going to get to everything here, especially given how many of these things end up being legends or rumors or stuff that can't be proven. But we can say one takeaway here is none of these politicians, presidents aren't the only politicians who have used illegal substances. None of them suffered the typical consequences of violating drug laws. No jail time, no fines, no probation. What's the other one? No ankle bracelets, no drug test. Well, they probably get drug tests pretty often, right? How does that work?
Oh, I kind of doubt it. Don't you?
Well, just so the
when's the last time you had a drug test?
Well, I just mean they get physicals.
You can't ask me that.
legally. But what I'm saying is, like, who's gonna?
What are they gonna do if he does buy?
Mr. President, yeah.
We're gonna need you to do some counseling. Yeah, no, I'm the president,
Mr. President.
Get out of my face,
Mr. President. You can give us the Quaaludes now, or we're gonna have to search your room. Okay,
I do what I want. Rips bong.
So,
do you guys think? Seriously,
yeah.
Within our lifetimes, do you think it will be like marijuana, cannabis will be normalized to the point where a sitting president can be a just casual user of marijuana after hours and everybody would be okay with it?
Maybe.
If it was made legal, it's legal in the District of Columbia.
Yeah, if it's in our lifetimes, that's a long enough, hopefully, stretch of time that it could be possible, because, you know, think about it attaining the role of alcohol, or sort of the image of alcohol. Like it's very common for campaigning people, if they do imbibe, it's common for them to like have a beer with the local folks. We're here in Wisconsin. Absolutely. You know,
you do champagne toasts when you win an election or whatever. But like, it's about attitude though, right? Like, I mean, if it's about like, you know, playing to a base and constituents and all that. And even if it's legal, there's a lot of voters that if they thought the president was smoking wacky tobacco, they might not like it too much. So it's not about the law. It's about like, I mean, I know that's what you're saying, Matt, but I just think that's the thing that would make it be a long road to that, because of people's, you know, remaining biases, which you're right, is turning. The tide of that is turning as well.
And the president would have to follow federal law first in that regard. So like they can't, the federal law is so contradictory, right, with the stance of state laws at this point. So it would be, it's a big bowl of spaghetti. I don't know if it would happen. Now I honestly, I don't know how I would react, because I just,
that's what I was thinking about. Like how would we personally react to the fact that the president just smokes weed? Not that it's a bad thing. It's just, as we stated at the top of this, the pressures that the president is under and the like
things that I totally lost the launch codes. I'm sorry. So high.
I mean, it's not even as, you know, or silly or dramatic as that. Just little things, like little decisions on diplomacy and some of the reactions. I don't know.
100%.
Like I can see myself saying, you know what, I want to be fair. I love the guy's snack policy. I think that's done a lot. I like the soundtracks that are playing when the speeches start, but I wish they started on time and maybe we're a little more focused. And less discussing the music that was playing as this person walked up. I don't know. I just always assume that if you were working at that height, like you have so much stuff you have to do. I would question like the time, right? What is your recovery time to be non-inebriated on your thing, which is, you know, not letting the world descend into chaos or whatever.
It's a matter of professionalism too. I mean, we deal with plenty of folks that live and work in California, you know, where weed's super legal, but if they showed up mega stoned to like an important business Zoom or something, that's not a good look. So, you know, I mean, it's just a matter of like professionalism and just sort of like the weight of the office and all that. So I would say no. I would say that's maybe never going to happen, and I'm okay with that.
I'm okay with it not happening, but I could see it happening. And again, you know, these folks are all human. These are all human beings. We haven't touched on other world leaders, but you are going to find similar stories across the planet. There was one anecdote that was still hilarious. So former President Bill Clinton here in the U.S. had a really weird relationship with his Russian counterpart, Boris Yeltsin. And Yeltsin liked to party. And this is a true story. One time he was staying at the White House. He got like dead drunk, like fall down drunk. The sheets are not in the wind because the wind isn't sober enough to carry him drunk. And he stumbled out onto Pennsylvania Avenue, fighting off security in his underwear in D.C. And he was screaming for a taxi because he wanted to go get pizza. He was unsuccessful.
Did he not know that the whole thing with pizza is that they deliver it? Like,
it was a different time, maybe. I don't know. I mean, he was unfamiliar with that. But But and that's, you know, that's another person living under enormous pressure. So we don't know specifics. But at this point, I think we turn the story over to you, fellow conspiracy realist. This is a question I have, Matt, for you and for you, Noel, and for you listening at home. Ethically, should this kind of secrecy exist? This secrecy coupled with, let's be honest, the lack of consequences or lack of legal consequences. Is there a valid greater good argument here? Is it more important for the public not to know this is going on? Or is should these world leaders be held accountable? And if so, how? I don't know.
I leave it to listeners to let us know what they think. Honestly, I think it's an interesting question, and it's almost a whole nother conversation. Maybe we can, read back some people's responses on an upcoming listener mail.
Well, yeah, I'll give you my answer really fast. If we knew what went on behind the closed doors of the White House in any given presidency, I think we would the country would explode in many ways because completely lose faith in the office.
Yeah. That's a good point, Matt.
That's a very good point. Yeah. So what do you think, folks? We can't wait to hear from you. We try to be easy to find us online, Instagram, Facebook, all the hits, all the good ones, all that slow jazz of the World Wide Web. Go check out Here's Where It Gets Crazy on our Facebook page. And stay tuned because we have some big announcements on the way. We are a show that is about transparency, so it is killing us that we cannot yet tell you what's on the line, but it'll be worth it. And if you hate social media, then why not give us a call? Because we have a phone number moving up in the world.
Oh, yes. 1-833-STDWYTK is the number to reach our hotline. You will hear the sound of Ben's voice inviting you to tell your tale, to leave us your message, your missive. Anything else they should be thinking about, Matt, when they're recording said missive?
Yes, come up with a cool nickname just to stay a little more anonymous than us knowing exactly who you are. Note that we do get your phone number. It is a voice messaging service, so you may receive a call back. That is a fair warning that we are giving to you right now.
Not a creepy callback, like a callback from one of us, most likely you, Matt.
No, not creepy at all, Noel. We do ask that you give us permission to use your message and voice and nickname on the air. That's just, you can do that really quickly. Then you've got 3 minutes. Say whatever you'd like. Bonus points if you can make us laugh. And if you've got more that you'd like to say than can fit in that 3 minutes, instead consider sending us an email. We are
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, berry lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
Hello there. I'm Ann Thompson, editor-at-large for IndieWire.
And I'm IndieWire's deputy film editor, Ryan Latanzio.
And we're the co-hosts of IndieWire's weekly Screen Talk podcast.
Join us each week for an in-depth discussion of the latest in film and TV industry news with special guests along the way, including filmmakers and executives.
Hear from us every Friday morning on iHeart platforms or wherever you get your podcasts as IndieWire shares what we've learned from the movie week that was.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.